Okay, we're going to get things started. I am Jeff Christman. I'd like to thank everybody for being here tonight at ArtSpace at Untitled for Inspiring Conversations Live. Before we get some live interviews underway, I'd like to introduce three friends of mine. This is the BRD Jazz Trio. This is Brian Belenas on guitar, Ray Bowen on bass, and Dave Bowen on drums. And they're going to actually share a couple of tunes with us.
That song was entitled November 15th. You know, it was a good one. Right? They're with us. Thank you guys for coming. And gals and everybody else. What are we doing? It's a Wayne Shorter composition entitled Speak No Evil. Another apt choice for the day.
actually we're listening to tonight. This is the BRD Jazz Trio. This is on guitar Brian Belenis, Ray Bowen on bass, and Dave Bowen on drums. And we'll have another couple of tunes from them a little later this evening. Guys, if you want to take a moment, maybe step over to the couch. We're going to kind of hear a little bit of the story of how these three incredibly talented musicians came together, and we'll kind of go from there. Thank you guys again. This is fantastic. So what a journey this has been. I thought I have actually interviewed Brian. We've actually done a podcast interview before. Ray, I know that we'll definitely want to get to that. Dave and I actually attempted to do an interview and ended up talking for 3 hours, and I somehow didn't ever get around to turning the recorder on. So we'll.
That's called pulling a Dave, by the way.
Well, I tell you what, where do we start? What I'd like to really do is maybe, in as much, and I realize there's a lot to this, but to really encapsulate, maybe we start just in the recent past, hearing a little bit more about, you know, how you guys came together and what the motivation was behind that.
That starts with these two.
Yeah.
I'm the last to join. So.
Yeah, I mean, Ray and I met at UCO, and one of my professors there told me, a long time ago, just find a bass player, you'll find somebody, just hang out, jam with them all the time. That person, lucky for me, wound up being her. So we just started to play once a week at my house, at her place, with, you know, Jimmy, her old roommate, great drummer. It just was a jam thing, but it was most often just us. And we started playing gigs, and it was just like, we're always around each other. And then Dave came here.
And that happened. I kind of interjected my, you know, I just kind of was like, you know, we met and became fast friends, and then obviously soon after that fell for each other, so I was basically following her around like a puppy dog, because she's gorgeous and really good cook, and she's a bass player, so for a drummer that's a perfect, that's a unicorn for you.
Oh, yeah.
So I was like, can I come play with you guys? You know, because I had just moved back to town, and I didn't have really that many friends that I you know, kept in touch with and played jazz with. Or they wouldn't call me back, you know. So I kind of just came over and started playing, and we realized how much we had fun playing together. And so we try to do it weekly, if at all possible. We all have crazy schedules, but we do our best to try to, you know, we always throw songs at each other, like, hey, I know you're not doing anything. You're in there playing video games. Listen to this song while you're playing. So that's kind of the way that this thing works. It's the way it should be, at least.
Yeah, and it's interesting too that, you know, you guys, and I was going to say, the first jazz concert I came to after moving to Oklahoma City was at Saints, and I believe that night I think all three of you were there.
Yep.
I believe.
Yep. That her feature night, probably.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And I was going to say that I was immediately there. I didn't know you guys. I didn't know anything about you. And yet I really did feel this certain chemistry. There was something that I don't always necessarily perceive with musicians and with musical groups. And I knew there had to be a story behind this.
I think most centrally it's our ability to make fun of each other. That's kind of what keeps it going.
Humility. You gotta know you're wrong when you're wrong. And if you don't have friends telling you that,
They're not your friends.
Yeah, and then as far as looking at you all, you know, as we talked a little bit about you guys collectively, and everyone's had an opportunity to experience your music, I didn't know if maybe each of you wanted to share just a little bit about maybe how you how you ended up here in Oklahoma City and where you guys came together. If you maybe kind of the short version of
start there.
Of course, they start with the old guy. I was born City, raised in, for the most part, raised, fed and clothed and like loved and stuff, but they couldn't handle me. I was a drummer at a very early age, but raised in Yukon. So there was a great music program out there, and my father worked at a music school in Bethany, Oklahoma.
It burned down, unfortunately, back in 1993. But I grew up as a music store brat. So musicians were the only people I knew in the world. So everybody else was a weirdo, you know. So music life was kind of like the norm, I guess. You know, so I gravitated towards music, obviously. And I went to school, out of high school, and went to UCO for a few years and was recruited to go to school. I went up to New York, went there, and stayed there for many years, and then went on cruise ships. Then I went and toured in Texas doing country music for many years, about 12 years, and then came back here due to some familial, you know, family circumstances kind of stuff, like everybody's story, you know? And I didn't plan on staying here, and I met them, and it was just like, wow. This reminded me, meeting them and a bunch of their peers that are coming out of UCO and had been through that program, reminded me a lot like what we had starting back in the 1990s, which was a really special program. And it's always kind of had its own thing, you know. So we're just, it's kind of neat to see your own kind again. You know?
Yeah.
That's what it felt like. So I was like a puppy dog following them around. Let's play together. Yeah. So, but yeah, so I mean, I met both of them just because of music. So music's kind of my central thing that brings me around. I usually don't leave the house for anything else.
Yeah.
Except school now, because I'm in school, so I go to class. So.
And then Ray, I didn't know if you wanted to share a little bit about just how you ended up here in Oklahoma City. And
I'm originally from Taiwan, which is a really small island, like across the world from, like, on the side, the other side of the world. And I actually started to play piano when I was 4, then starting to play bass when I was 9. But it's all like classical training, because I think you guys know about Asian style education, right? Yeah, that's true. It's not stereotype. Because I grew up with that. And so I've been playing classical in the symphony and in the chamber and studying, like, majoring in music when I was in college. And I remember when the summer, like 2008, I went to France to participate at a camp. It's about an international bass camp. And in that camp, they have two parts. They have classical part and the jazz part. That was the first time I heard about jazz. But I was really, like, disrespectful, because I was like, they started too late. I want to go to sleep, something like that. Yeah, because they were studying, like, 10 p.m. and play until 1 a.m. And the anyway, so I think that was the first time I heard jazz. And then I went to the jazz camp, the very first jazz camp in Taiwan. Somehow they had it, and I went there to support my friend, actually. I didn't, like, mean to, like, I want to play jazz. I know what is jazz. I didn't know any of that. So I went there, and then I feel like, huh, this is pretty cool, because, in classical music, we need to play everything, like, do the detail on the chart and, you know, make it perfect and make it, like, really, really beautiful. But in the jazz music, it's different. You still have a chart, you still have a lead sheet, but you can do a lot of different things with that kind of music. So that really amazed me and made me want to know more about jazz. So after I graduated from college, I worked for about 4 years, been teaching and trying to find a jazz teacher in Taiwan, because we really didn't have much information at that time. I watched a lot of YouTube, and I'm really basing from, like, learn a lot from YouTube. Then I feel like, okay, I probably need to go somewhere to learn jazz, because I don't know what I know is the right thing or it was the wrong thing. So I started to search online and found UCO and found other schools, but UCO offered me some scholarship. So that's why I ended up with be here. And after I graduated from UCO, actually, I was planning to leave. Then I met him. So, and we got married. And so I'm staying here right now.
Yeah.
Right.
And we're definitely glad that you guys met. It's And then Brian, I wish I could tell you you're going to get out of this, man. But it's the spotlight's on you.
No. I mean, I was fortunate to study guitar with a teacher that went to Berklee, which is the School of Music up in Boston. It's very progressive, everything from jazz to pop to hip hop to anything you can possibly imagine that you want to study. So he went there. He just kind of knew everything. He just threw everything at me, scales, like all this crazy theory and stuff that I just didn't really get. But I started obsessing about it and like trying to write out modes and stuff when I was supposed to be in math class paying attention. I just would like, oh, it looks like I'm working. And so that kind of started it, and then it just kind of kept going. And then he showed me like Bill Frisell, who's kind of a crossover jazz guitar player, kind of does everything. But really beautiful stuff. But he gave me a Bill Frisell record, a Miles Davis record, and a Thelonious Monk record. And it was just kind of like, see what sticks. Mm. You know, see what sticks. And I was like, man, I like this Thelonious Monk. Like, that was one of my first, you know, things to ever listen to with jazz. I was like, this album cover looks really quirky and cool. I'm gonna check this out. And I think it was Straight No Chaser, which is just like a blues kind of
thing. Wow. Yeah.
It's a blues tune. And so that was kind of what started it. And then he kind of set me up for life, fortunately. I went and did some other stuff. I learned how to build and repair guitars. I did that in Minneapolis. Then I moved to Austin and apprenticed a guy. And then he, my original guitar teacher, wound up going to UCO to get a master's degree, like, you know, when he was 40, to study music. And he was like, hey, you got to meet this guy, Danny Vaughn. That's the guy you got to meet. You got to play guitar. You got to learn from this guy. And I was like, all right, whatever. So I called Danny, talked to Danny. It's one of those people who's just like, all right, I'm going to study here, I guess. Like, he's just infectious. Like, one of those personalities, you're just like, all right, you're the guy, I guess. You know, you talked me into it. You didn't really have to say a whole lot, you know. So I moved up here back from Austin just to study with Danny. And I went to school and, you know, did all that and just studied jazz and fell deeper and deeper into it. And it's just, you know, I can't imagine doing anything else. I mean, what else is there to do?
Yeah.
If you're not following your creative passion, you're just in an office, I guess. I don't know. Sorry if that's good. But, like, that's
passion
just,
is an office.
Yeah, yeah, if you're passionate.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, you know, I wanted to pursue that from the time I was 13, you know, just play the guitar.
Wow. You know, I'm sitting here thinking to myself, of course, I'm 53 years old, and I mean, my grandparents and parents listened to jazz. I grew up, I mean, that was the first music I remember listening to. So it goes without saying that I'm an incredible fan of this. But it seems like over the last, you know, 30, 40, 50 years, I don't know why, it seems like sometimes in terms of popularity, and I know there's a lot of different genres of music out there. I guess I almost feel like, and this is coming from a place of, I mean, I don't think any, you know, I definitely am one of those people that's very passionate about jazz music, but if people want to know, I guess I would ask you all, you know, why is this relevant still? Why should people still be listening to jazz music? I don't know if that's a fair question, or it just kind of came to me.
I can answer in one thing that I would ask.
I'll answer in another.
Yeah, so let's see if we're on the same page. I'll start. I'll be sure. So I think as Miles said, it's social music.
Yeah.
So there's no one style that's perfect for anybody. There's so many different types of personalities and people in the world. So there's going to be a song that speaks to people, and sometimes what we do is that's for them.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. Didn't know if anyone else has any thoughts.
I mean, I forgot where I've heard this recently. I think it was either Roy Hargrove or Nicholas Payton, some trumpeter interview I was listening to. But they talked about jazz as being a creative music. It shouldn't be this thing that we typecast as jazz. Like, jazz is this thing that was there and gone. Like, there's still elements that are retained now, but it was Charlie Parker. It was Dizzy Gillespie. It was this kind of bebop era of jazz, and then Louis Armstrong, you know, but kind of at that, you know, Charlie Parker phase, it was kind of jazz loosely, you know, this thing that kept going. But I think the central element is it's creative music, so it allows us to be creative on the spot. Like we played that one song, the first song we've played before. That second song we've never played before, ever, until now. And so whatever, that's what happened.
Yeah. It won't be like that again.
Yeah,
I promise.
But that's kind of the thing that makes it, you know, relevant. Other than being a social music, because you're there, that experience is totally unique to you in that moment that you're there. So if you're like plastered with your friends laughing a whole lot, you're probably going to miss some stuff.
Yeah.
But still, that's part of your experience. You're part of their experience. So maybe we're on the band stand playing really aggressively because we're like, this people could just be quiet and then they hear what we're doing. So it kind of allows a lot of audience participation rather than, you know, maybe a rock show, which is somebody else's, you know, favorite music. But to some of us, it's like it's four chords. I don't know. It's words, you know. Not that that's bad. It's just to other people, we, you know, I think we have kind of this creative thing that happens. Every time we play a song, it's different. And maybe the rock band feels the same way, but I have not experienced that, so I can't speak to that.
Interesting. And I don't know if I'm correct in this. Am I correct in that in terms of the improvisation, in terms of the importance of being able to improvise and be in the moment? Is listening? I feel like I've heard that before. I can't remember who the musician was that said that, but they were talking about one of the most important skills you could have besides the skill of playing instruments is listening. And so I was curious if any of you or all of you, you know, have some thoughts about, you know, the importance of that, being able to actually listen and be in the moment. Don't know if anything's there or not, but
I agree. Yeah, I think, like, especially when somebody starts doing something and somebody else latches on to that, then the thing that you did becomes a thing, and you didn't even know that that was a thing. Sometimes that wasn't what even you were intending, but then somebody else picks up on it. Like Dave will start playing something, and that's the thing. And now, okay, I have to follow that now and see where that goes. And so it's kind of like we're creating something together. It's not just three of us playing a different song at the same time. We're all kind of trying to listen to, well, where is this thing going? Sometimes it goes over here, sometimes it goes over here, and sometimes it just goes everywhere. But if we're not listening, we're not going to figure out, you know, okay, where are we now? Like,
yeah,
you know, trying to find a center back to, you know, whatever home is.
Yeah, and I'm almost sitting here thinking to myself that, you know, I'm trying to imagine, I don't have any musical skill, but it would seem to me like I would be absolutely mortified to be up on a stage and just, you know, trusting, I mean, was it like that in the early years when you got started, or was that just something you just were able to, wow, so it doesn't get any easier?
Like driving, I mean, it's like there's always a new variable that you have to adjust to, and be prepared to react to in nanoseconds, you know, it's pretty unbelievable, like, you know, to think about what some musicians are able to do. What I do is a lot easier because I don't have to think harmonically. I recognize things harmonically, but I just kind of see the shape. They're dealing with brush strokes, you know.
So
all I got to do is make sure I get kind of the shape, and it's cool. But for what they're doing, it's pretty involved. So, I mean, absolutely, it's every day. It's a new, you know, the same song will never, especially for what we do, I mean, it'll never be the same because it's a discussion on a topic, so your ideas are never the same on a topic. You're going to try a new idea out, you know, when you talk about the same thing over and over.
Do you ever find that sometimes things just happen and it's like, oh my gosh, this is really working.
Absolutely.
And then you just suddenly, you know, you just kind of have to follow that and let it go where it goes. Yeah. Is there sometimes, do you get attached to that? Is it, in other words, if you know, something really is working and then all of a sudden you don't want that to end, or you just want that to keep going? And
you can get lost in the moment, I think so. I've seen her do it. It's really cool. Because she's such a supportive bass player, so that when she hears a cool idea and someone's really going for it, she's really good about catching them. And so it's really neat to watch, because I'm the first one to, like, teeter over the edge. You know, I'm going to mess everything up. That's my job. I'm a drummer. Somebody's got to be crazy. So.
That's great.
So it's really, I mean, we definitely get into a moment that's
You know, to me, I feel like there's a statement that empty vessels make the loudest sound.
Yeah.
I feel like sometimes that's what we are, because you kind of have to shut yourself off at a certain point to really be purely improvising. You can still recognize your environment, but you don't have to, you know, you don't have to predict what you're going to do sometimes. And there's not a lot of parts of life that allow you that access to that, because we're kind of like painters that are allowed any colors that we want, whereas maybe a corporate painter has to use the corporate colors. We don't.
Ah, gotcha. Yeah.
So whatever our posters are going to be are what we do, not from, you know, management telling us, no, guys, the bass solo was too good. You know, you're an agent that played like less notes, guys. You know.
Yeah. So,
and that happens, and that's okay too, but that's a different thing. We don't do that, and that's what we don't do together. That's what's so fun about this, because there's no goal of like, we're going to make $1 million. No. We'll likely spend $1 million together before we make it, you know? And that's fine too, but you know, I mean, the deal is this music is purely, it's celebratory in a lot of ways for us, because so we definitely get lost in it. I know I do.
Yeah.
I'll mess up because I'll watch them. Like, I'll see him do something that makes her giggle, and then she'll do something back at him, and then I try to figure out what they're doing, and I'm like, well, that was funny. Oh, crap, I'm playing drums, you know? And it's true. I'm not making this stuff up. I mean, ask him. I mean, you guys saw it, I promise. If you paid attention, you would have saw it. I've seen that.
And I think that's that whole thing about paying attention. You know, it kind of blows my mind to think about how somebody could be watching you guys play or watching any jazz performance or even listening to a recording, and you could be oblivious to the fact that this is a purely improvisational music to a certain. I mean, I realize there are arrangements and there's standards, but I mean, I think it's possible. I don't know if I'm right about that or not. That you could literally be oblivious to, if someone didn't know, they would think that this is.
It sounds like noodly noise to my sister who's growing up with me. I have a twin sister. She doesn't play anything, even the radio. She doesn't even play that. She always hated jazz. She always told me, you know, I can't stand that noodly noise. You know? And what was funny was because she tried to play a clarinet, and when I would hear her playing it, it was definitely noodly noise.
Yeah.
Anyway, just saying.
And then, because I really get the feeling that this is art. I mean, this is music. I mean, that's just one person's opinion, but it really does feel like this is art, and that's created in the moment.
It's like trying to redraw pictures we all like together. It's kind of the best analogy I can give you.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
Musician.
Yeah. And then I guess to kind of bring this all together, kind of to a conclusion, as far as, you know, you guys are living, breathing jazz musicians and human beings here in Oklahoma City. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts about the jazz scene here in Oklahoma City, and kind of what's maybe sharing with the audience, kind of what your perspective on what's going on with that? And
yeah, I mean, I feel like with these guys, one of the things I was going to say is just trust. Like, that's what allows us to be able to go to other places. We all still play with other people, and you know, hopefully they trust us and they feel the same feeling we feel. But I think that's one of the high points now, is that there's so many people now of a caliber that we can all kind of trust each other. So no matter who you call, you know, you've got a list of people now that you can call, whereas it's like it used to be nobody, you know, it used to be very few people, and now it's kind of grown to a size where everybody is contributing like super high, and it's really cool. I think it's crazy to be a part of.
It's like there really is a scene here, right? I mean,
yeah,
there is.
Yeah. People that say that there's no jazz scene in Oklahoma aren't looking, because there's a lot of people that love jazz here.
Yeah,
there's a deep historical tradition of jazz here, and jazz came from here too. But people seem to gloss over that and remember cowboys and Indians. They don't remember that what happened here was this is an interstate town everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
So people passed through here from everywhere.
And, I mean, I feel like we're sitting.
Music was deposited here, and that's what we're part of that tradition. You know?
Yeah. And I feel like we're kind of sitting, you know, not, you know, about a block away, roughly, or a block and a half, two blocks away from kind of the epicenter, you know, of Deep Deuce. And,
And that's a huge honor to be a part of that, you know, be from that same city. You know, it's kind of cool. Because my hometown is Garth Brooks. That's okay.
Oh, yeah.
You like those roles and those songs. It's cool. Friends in low places. But I mean, I'm a big fan of what the jazz community is here, because I was scared when I came back, because I lived in New York City. I'd seen the epitome of the jazz scene, you know, going to jam sessions till 10 in the morning every night, you know, from 4 a.m. to 10 a.m. You could go jam. That's unheard of where I grew up. So whenever I came back here,
I started hearing, oh, there's this open jam on Sundays and Mondays and Tuesdays. And I was like, what?
Hmm.
No, not in Oklahoma City. Like, you know, the population's growing, but it's Oklahoma City. It's my hometown. I know that one. And for real, that's what I found. And it was amazing because it wasn't just the kids in college. There were grown musicians that were playing that are from other towns that are just elated to walk into town and find it, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's not just something for academia and for kids that go to college. Because I think a lot of people assume that that's all this music is anymore, something to be studied and not be celebrated and part of, you know, because it seems like a hush. You know, it's that stuff they do in big cities, and we don't, but we do have a jazz scene here.
Yeah. You guys are living proof that it is alive and well, and I just cannot thank you guys enough for coming out tonight and sharing your music with everyone and your story and your perspective, and really, really appreciate that. Just really honored to have you guys here. I think what we'll do is take a quick break if everybody wants to get up and grab a little something to drink for a minute. I don't know if you guys want to maybe kind of, if you guys feel like maybe playing a tune kind of while everybody gets up and stretches for a moment. And then after that, we are going to transition into actually more in-the-moment stuff. I actually have Topher Owen here, the founder and creative director of The Space, which is a comedy improv troupe here in Oklahoma City. And we actually have Ann Lizette Cavney. And oh my gosh, I was always embarrassed. I had a nightmare last night. Kellen Hodgson. Kellen, I'm so sorry. I got close. I almost remembered. I'm trying. Anyway, we're going to take a few minutes, and then we'll actually be back with the folks from The Space and hear a little bit about their story and what they do. Thanks.